This is Fran Frischeller from ESPN, and you are listening to the Hardwood Hustle.
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention?
Hey, everyone! Come and see how good I look!
How did you learn to play basketball?
I saw it on TV a couple times. I thought, I can do that.
Every single day, in every walk of life, ordinary people do extraordinary things.
Talent you have naturally. Skill is only developed by hours and hours and hours of beating on your craft.
When you want to succeed as bad as you want to breathe, then you'll be successful.
You're listening to the Hardwood Hustle, brought to you by Better Basketball. Now here are your hosts, Adam Bradley and Alex Stein.
Alrighty, thank you for tuning in. You're listening to the Hardwood Hustle, broadcasting from the National High School Hoops Festival at DeMatha High School. I'm your host, Adam Bradley, alongside Alan Stein.
Every day I'm hustling.
Hey, coaches, what do the DeMatha Stags, Kentucky Wildcats, and Cleveland Cavaliers all have in common? They all use Crossover's affordable film breakdown service. Make sure you visit crossoverwithak.com today.
And as always, stay tuned to the very end of today's episode when we'll announce the Vertimax Hustler Award. Vertimax is the undisputed leader in improving explosiveness on the court. Check out Vertimax.com to see why. And if you want the best hoops writing and photography in your own home, make sure you check out Slam Magazine everywhere Slam. Magazines are sold, or subscribe to Slam Online.
You ready for this, Alan?
I've been ready for this one for a long time.
Take away, buddy.
Yeah, well, folks, we're really excited. We are here at DeMatha Catholic High School, and we've got three of our top players joining us today, because for a long time since we've started this show, we've wanted to give the perspective from a high school student athlete. And we've got three kids here that represent DeMatha basketball very well. And there are three kids and players that you're going to be hearing about for a long time, because all of them have a tremendous ceiling of potential and are just great kids. And we're going to get them to open up and share what it means to play at one of the premier programs in the country. We have Mr. Nate Darling, DJ Harvey, and Markel Fulks. And the first thing we're going to do, because they each
Welcome,
have
gentlemen.
A very, very different Thank background, you. Is I want them just to take a minute and kind of share how they got here. And we will start with our Canadian import, my man, Nate Darling. Thanks for being here, brother.
No problem.
Talk to us a little bit about how you got here.
From Canada, huh?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. Wow, okay.
You don't have your passport with you, do you?
No.
All right, you need to start bringing that. I got to check that thing.
You don't have much of an accent, though.
No, that's a stereotype, really.
What's that all about? That's one of the things I'd always hear. All right.
He'll make a three-pointer, eh?
Yeah.
he'll throw that in there. No, seriously, Nate, tell the story about how we met and how this got started.
I was looking to come down to the States to play ball, to get away from Canada, try to play ball in the States, and heard about you coming down, so I decided to go to one of your camps and check it out. And, you know, you were nice enough to invite me down and came down. I loved it here and came back next year.
I think you asked for my autograph after that camp, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, I was probably nice enough to sign a ball for him. But no, all kidding aside, I've actually done cutting edge clinics in Halifax, Nova Scotia for the last 7 years. And I met Nate. The first thing that impressed me about him was he got to the workout 30 minutes early and nice. He was putting up shots before the clinic. And I just love that.
Said Nate's one of the sharpest shooters you've come across in
yeah,
your time, right?
He shoots lights out and it's not an accident. He puts in serious work. But anyway, long
was
story
that,
short.
Was that your first introduction to DeMatha?
Yeah. Well, my dad knew about it, and he knew how crazy the program was. And when he heard he was coming down, he was super excited to get me in that gym. So.
Nice.
Nate's dad was a very, very accomplished player up in Canada, big time university player. But anyway, just to kind of make a long story very, very short, kind of at the end of the camp, Nate expressed interest in coming down to DeMatha, and I get that a lot when I travel around and go to clinics. And with all due respect to Nate, I kind of looked at him and said, I don't know that you'd be a great fit at DeMatha. I don't know that you'd fit in there very well. And he was very persistent.
And
him
you
and
said
his mom,
that because?
Because he doesn't look, walk, and talk like most of the kids at DeMatha. Yeah. And we're going to dig into that, man, because you know, stereotypes and race and a lot of these different things that we joke about is a fabric of basketball. But anyway, the thing that I loved about Nate was him and his mom were unbelievably persistent about coming here. A week after the camp, he sent me a text saying, you know, seriously, I want to know more about DeMatha. His mom followed up with an email. Can we come visit for a practice? Can we meet Coach Jones? They were very aggressive in wanting to come here. So it's not like I went there and said, I got to bring this kid to Canada. I went there and this kid said, I believe in myself enough that I can play at a program like DeMatha.
That's awesome.
And it's amazing. And I do want to touch on one thing that you said about you wanted to come to the States. Is that kind of a popular feeling in Canada? Do most of the kids there aspire to come to the States, or is that a stereotype that we have here, thinking that everybody wants to be a part of the U.S.?
Well, you know, everybody wants, like, the goal is to go professional, and, like, can't really do that from the Canadian schools, and they all want to play D1 at the big schools, and you got to get the exposure in the U.S. They're like, schools are starting to come down to Canada now because of all the kids coming to the U.S.
Yeah.
But at first, like, that didn't really happen that much.
And how do you think, like, how do your friends and outside of your immediate family and everyone in your hometown feel about you leaving? Because let's be honest, Canadian basketball is big time now. I mean, the last two number one draft picks are from Canada. Yeah, I mean,
Steve Nash.
And Nate's future is unbelievably bright. But how do your fellow countrymen at home feel about you kind of leaving to come here? Is that something everybody's okay with?
Do they think you sold out?
What
do they think? I mean, do they think like you sold out and left Canada to go to the States? And
nah, everybody was all supportive. Like they think it's like a great thing to do, and like a lot of kids are trying to do the same thing now.
Nice.
And like,
okay,
because not a lot of kids came from Nova Scotia, and like people are trying to do it now. So,
and you know, I've put on Twitter a couple times that it's kind of a joke, but that a gym rat is on the endangered species list. That kids aren't gym rats anymore. And one thing that's really cool, the three kids we have sitting here with us now are actually gym rats. I mean, right before they came to this recording, guys, without anyone telling them, they've been over in our second gym putting up shots. But Nate, ever since I've met him, literally that first introduction, this kid is a gym rat, a Canadian gym rat, but the kid is a gym rat, and he spends more time in the gym putting up shots than almost anybody I've ever met.
It's important to know, they just came, like you said, from getting shots up. They don't play for 6 hours from now.
The the team doesn't need to be here for 2 more hours, and these guys are here putting up shots, which is one of the reasons we could get their interview.
That's awesome.
Now, DJ, tell us a little bit about your background and how you got to Dematha, because you've had an interesting journey as well.
Yeah, my dad and my mother are from the military, so moved around a lot. When I was down in Huntsville, Alabama, that's when basketball really took off for me. And then when my dad decided to move up here to D.C., Maryland area, word got out. Coach Jones started pressing us to come to Dematha, and we made our decision at the John Lucas Midwest Invitational. And then it's done wonders to my game. I really think this is the greatest, probably one of the best decisions I've ever made.
Now, did you check some other schools out in the D.C. area? Did you and your dad do your due diligence and visit some other schools? And you can gladly name them. I'm sure they're rivals of ours. But what was kind of the process like? And that's the other thing that I want to make sure that folks note. What's very interesting is, generally speaking, Adam, and I don't know if you know this, 99% of all the players that play at Dematha, regardless of sport, are DMV natives. We're not a boarding school.
Right.
You know, of course, we started off by leading with someone from a different country, but Nate actually lives with a host family here. And as DJ just said, we didn't recruit him from Alabama to come here. His dad was going to move here to work, and once they made that decision, then they did their due diligence to check out a school. So for anyone thinking that Dematha goes to Canada and to Huntsville, Alabama to recruit players, that's not the case. Our job is to get the very best players in the DMV to come to Dematha. We just happen to have two unbelievable exceptions right here. But sorry, DJ, go back to, did you guys check out some other schools, and what were some of your thoughts, and what ultimately made you feel most comfortable with Coach Jones and Dematha?
Okay. Well, me and my dad knew if I wanted to be the best, I had to get out of Alabama because it was a dominantly football state.
Yep.
And some of the schools we were looking at were Prime Prep in Mount Verde. I just told my dad that I really wanted to come to Dematha. It sounded like it was a great fit for me. At first, my dad wanted me to go to Mount Verde really bad, but he let me make my decision because he knew the older I get, I had to make decisions on my own. He can't really make any more decisions for me.
Wow.
And so I just went with my gut. The math sounded great.
So you're only a sophomore right now. So when was this conversation happening? I mean, is this 7th grade, 8th grade? I mean, when was this conversation happening?
Near the end of my 8th grade year.
Okay. That's when the kind of the mentality of, all right, where are we going to play? Where are we going to take this?
And to put everything in perspective for those listening, you guys know that I'm not real big into rankings. I could actually care less about that. But according to ESPN, I mean, DJ is one of the top 10 players in the country in his class. I mean, he's a major, major talent. And I always throw this stat out, and I don't do this to pump him up, because to be honest, DJ, the only thing that could derail you from being an unbelievable player is you believing all the hype. And as long as you don't do that and you continue to work the way that you've been working, I mean, you're going to be as good a player as we've seen. But in the history of Dematha basketball, for those of you listening that know, this program is over 60 years old. There have only been two freshmen in the history to start their very first varsity game as a freshman. Adrian Dantley, who's in the Basketball Hall of Fame, and DJ Harvey, who's sitting right here to my right. So that puts him in some pretty special company. And again, I just say that for perspective. But the moment DJ starts thinking his stuff doesn't stink anymore is the moment he's going to level off. And you know, so his path is not there. But boy, he's got the fast track up the stairs if he wants to keep taking the stairs. And as soon as he wants to get on the elevator, there's going to be a problem.
Done. And
but
we're certainly going to jump into that later in the episode, because I want to know what it feels like to play when you have this spotlight, when you have this kind of, when you're already on this platform. So
yes. And then lastly, Markel, your story might almost be my favorite of the three. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then I'll make sure I brag on you, my friend.
All right, I came here.
You're good.
He's on. All right, I came here as a freshman. I really came to DeMatha camp when I was little, a lot, since I was about 7. Really liked the environment. I wasn't really recruited here or anything. I just came here. They had a nice basketball team. I think it was a good school. So I came here as a freshman, enrolled, played freshman basketball. Really, I saw that I had a lot of improvement to do to try to make varsity, get stronger, faster. So that's what I did over the summer. And I came back my 10th grade year, played JV, and got really, 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 really better. And I think that's what got me ready for this year. That's how I came here.
And just real quick, throw out a couple of the schools that have offered you in the last couple of weeks. And I know, I mean, even John Calipari was here a few weeks ago to look at you two guys, and he came away real impressed with you, Markel, because I talked to him later that night. But who are some of the schools that have offered you right now?
Wake Forest, Maryland, Georgetown, Towson.
Well, listen, from a former Maryland grad, he could have just stopped after Maryland, but that's just my opinion.
Well, and you know, as a diehard Dukie, we're going to keep this ship going until Duke offers him. But I want to make sure that you guys understand, my favorite thing about Markel is that he has embraced this process unlike anybody else. And I don't ever want to make comparisons, but he's embraced the process the same way Victor Oladipo did. He was not heavily recruited to come to DeMatha. He wanted to come to DeMatha because he believed in himself and
his
game.
You're a local guy, right?
Yes.
Where'd you grow up?
Up in Marlboro. Really.
Up in Marlboro, yeah. Okay.
He played on the freshman team as a freshman. He played on the JV team as a sophomore, which for most people, that's the normal course of action. But in today's society, I'm sure there were people in Markel's ear saying, dude, you don't need to be playing JV. Mm-hmm. Come to this school and you'll play varsity. Come to this school, you'll start. Come to this school, you'll be the man. And Markel, his improvement from freshman to sophomore year and now from sophomore to junior year has been unbelievable. So in less than a 2-year window, he went from being a freshman player on a freshman team to having Danny Manning offer him a full scholarship at Wake Forest, to Turgeon to offer him a full scholarship at Maryland. And he's only scratching the surface of what he's capable of. But he is a kid that keeps himself very insulated. He has a great circle of people around him, and he doesn't listen to the hype. He is going to be a major big-time player because he embraces the process. And I'm telling you now that all the people that are in his ear saying, man, you don't have to be playing JV. Come play varsity. He is such a smart kid to ignore that and to stick to the process.
And I got to tell you, man, it is so refreshing to hear that story, because you look across the high school landscape, and these young athletes, to your point, Alan, are just so hungry to like get that exposure or to like be the man at a program. They're almost like hopping around trying to find every great opportunity, and the whole time they're more concerned with trying to find that exposure rather than simply just trying to get better. And it sounds like you just sat back and said, listen, I'm gonna trust the process. I'm just gonna control what I can control, and that's me getting better. And look where you are today. Is that accurate?
Yes, sir.
I mean, that's awesome.
Because as we always preach, the number one goal is for these three guys to graduate and be the best player that they're capable of when they graduate. It doesn't matter if Markel's the best player he can be as a freshman. That's irrelevant. But these three guys, I can tell you with full confidence, will graduate from DeMatha being the best players that they're capable of. And fortunately for these three, that means they'll play at a very high level. Now, Nate, what would you say was the hardest adjustment coming to DeMatha, whether it was on the court or off the court? What was the toughest thing about playing in a program like DeMatha?
It was mostly like just speed, athleticism, agility. Like everything was quicker, faster, stronger, taller. I was going in the lane in Canada, going up against 6'4 guys, come down here against like Thomas, 6'8, trying to do things like that. So that's probably the biggest adjustment.
Were you intimidated? Like, in all honesty, yeah, were you intimidated coming in, playing with this style of ball with these type of guys?
Yeah, for sure. Easily. Like,
interesting.
These guys are going, like, getting offers from big program. I'm coming in from Canada. I haven't even, like, heard, like, you know, like, talked to any of these coaches or anything. And, like, I'm intimidated.
But I'll tell you this. Don't let the pretty boy trick you, Adam. This kid has some serious swagger and some serious confidence in his game. And a lot of that has grown since he's got to DeMatha. But I remember on one of your visits, I think you played, I won't call him out, but you played one of our better defenders in a game on one-on-one. And he cooked him. I mean, he cooked him. That was when Coach Jones raised his eyebrow and said, okay, this kid can play for us. And what's been interesting is one of the things, and we'll dig into this more, one of the things...
Hold on, I feel like DJ doesn't remember this cooking.
No, he didn't cook DJ.
No, first of all,
I said best defender, so he certainly didn't cook DJ. DJ's not our best defender. But I remember vividly that conversation happening from Coach Jones. And but I like what Nate just mentioned, and that's what a lot of kids don't understand, that with the caliber of players these three kids are, that it's very similar to going from high school to college, and these guys will experience that. The game becomes so much faster. The game is played 3 or 4 inches higher, that everything is done at a quicker speed, and that was one of the bigger adjustments Nate had to make. And I noticed that because his shot is pure, but he had some trouble getting his shot off his first few weeks when he was here. Then he quickly acclimated, and once again, now he's the Canadian assassin.
What switched for you? What changed? When did this confidence change? When did the swagger all of a sudden come out for you? Was there a moment? Was there a play? Was there a series?
You know, it was mostly in, like, at the start, we started playing open gym, and, you know, I was scared. I was, like, airballing shots and stuff, but then, you know, I said, like, stop feeling sorry for yourself and, you know, like, just get it going. So I started hitting a couple shots. The guys actually started passing me the ball a little bit, and then, like, you know, well, yeah, and then I just started hitting more shots, and that's when.
If you had to guess, how many shots do you think you take or make a week outside of practice, outside of what is required of you by our coaches? Is that something you do fairly regularly? Now, and I don't mean to put you on the spot here. When Nate first moved here, Adam, he didn't really know anybody. I mean, he was kind of the new kid in town. So he didn't have a budding social life the way a lot of other kids did. So his thing was he would grab the keys and he'd come over to the gym and he'd put up shots on his own. And there were times he would come over literally and put up hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of shots on his own because he didn't have anything else to do. And that is why he is one of the last gym rats on the planet. But go back to the question.
What's that number? Yeah.
What do you think? How much time do you put in working on your craft outside of what our coaches make you do?
I usually, after practice, I go home and eat, and then I come back to the gym and go till curfew, really, and just shoot until curfew.
That's awesome.
Are you the best shooter on the team?
Yeah.
Oh, man, I was hoping that was something you'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like I am. Yeah.
Good. Yeah. We love that. Now DJ, we're going to switch gears for you. You know, last year, as we mentioned, as a freshman, you're starting at arguably one of the most storied programs in the history of high school basketball. What was the biggest challenge for you? You know, talent, at least since I've known you, talent's never been an issue with you. You're unbelievably talented. What was the biggest challenge for you coming to a program and playing a role on varsity as a 14, 15-year-old young man?
A lot of things, really. Not believing the hype, always keeping my head on my shoulders. My dad and coach always let me know if I was acting out of pride. Mm-hmm. And then also living up to expectations, really. As you said, Adrian Dantley was the other freshman to start, so I felt like I had big shoes to fill. And then coming out of middle school, I was one of the most dominant players. So when I came here, I thought I had to do the same. I had a pretty slow start as a freshman, but Coach Jones told me it happens. I just need to get adjusted. And I think it's done wonders.
Absolutely. Now, I know your father holds you to very high standards, and Coach Jones holds you to very high standards. And again, I mean, we could almost say Coach Jones can be pretty hard on you at times because he expects so much of you. Is that, you know... In the long run, I know you're going to look back and say that's a good thing, but is that tough to deal with now, having somebody that, I mean, if you step a little bit out of line, you know Coach Jones is on you, and I would assume that your father's the same way. Is that tough to deal with at your age?
It is, but I just have to embrace criticism, take it to heart, and just make sure I don't do it anymore. As my dad says, just look at him, nod, and then just let it go through in one year, out the other. Just make sure you get the main idea of it.
Absolutely. And don't take it personal, mm-hmm. Of course. Yeah.
All right. So, listen, Alan and I have never been recruited by guys like John Calipari in our playing days. How do you keep a level head? Like, how do you not get the head of just, like, your head's blown up from guys like this recruiting you, all these rankings and stuff like that? How do you stay humble?
Always in the gym. Honestly, my dad and Coach Jones never let me look at websites of recruiting rankings. And then there's always people in front of me, and like, I want to be that number one player in my class, right. So that always pushes me. And I want those Duke, Kentucky, North Carolina offers, and so that really pushed me also. And then when dang, I forgot.
It's all right.
I forgot.
Well, no, oh, well, let's, I want to ask you the same question, DJ. How much time do you put into your craft outside of what our program requires you to do? Like, what else do you do? I mean, we, and again, you guys know because you've listened to this show before, we require our players to go to study hall. We require them to do strength and conditioning with me. We require them to go to practice. We require them in game. I mean, we have a lot of stuff we ask these kids to do. But how much time do you put in extra to what we ask you to do?
Well, in the mornings, I go. Me and Ryan Allen, one of my teammates, we come here every morning.
What time?
6:30.
Love that.
And that's every morning except Thursday.
What time school start?
7:45.
Okay.
And then after practice, I usually get up shots at a Bowie gym. And then about on weekends, sometimes I work out with my AU coach, Keith Stevens, for about 2 or 3 hours.
Okay.
And, yeah, that's pretty much it.
There you go.
That's awesome.
Impressive.
And, Markel, now how were you able to not believe all the folks that were saying you don't need to be playing freshman at DeMatha, you don't need to be playing JV, come play it, you know, at whatever your public high school would be, come transfer to our private school? What was it that kept you wanting to stay at DeMatha? Because you're a rare breed, man. In today's day and age, everybody wants the here and now. And for you to be patient enough to wait for your junior year to start getting some shine, I have so much respect for you for that.
I can't wait to hear why. Why you did this.
Yeah, how was that? I mean, did you ever have thoughts of leaving? And it's okay if you did.
Yeah. Probably after my freshman year, I had thoughts of leaving, but my mom just told me to wait. My time's gonna come, and God got stuff planned for me. So
absolutely,
that's what I stay with.
Yeah, you're talking Adam's language now, because Adam's no, and I mean that very respectfully. Adam's a very strong man of faith, and that guides a lot of the things that Adam does. And I think that's
tremendous. We share success in common.
Most certainly.
But no. I mean, but talk about that temptation. All right, you could have been the man at another program. Okay, and that certainly was there and available for you. You chose to maybe not chase that desire. What exactly was it? The mom, was it your mom? I mean, did you inside want to be the man somewhere else?
Really, kinda I did, but kinda I didn't, because I didn't think I was as strong and physical as good as I can be. So I didn't think I can handle it just yet.
Yeah, that's powerful. And there was the halftime buzzer, folks. And anytime we hear the halftime buzzer, we're going to get some wisdom from PGC Basketball.
Thanks, guys. TJ Rosine here with PGC Basketball. Once again, another good topic, guys, what it takes to become an elite player. Oftentimes at our PGC sessions, at the very beginning, we tell players to close their eyes. Envision, what does that special player look like? It's your school or school that you play against. You know, that person that makes everybody around them better. That elite player that coaches love coaching. The parents ooh and awe over in the stands, the fans love watching, the teachers love teaching. You know, what does that special player look like? And it's really interesting. After you tell them to open their eyes and throw out some adjectives that describe that player, you never get a 4.4 40 or a 40-inch vertical or benches 300 pounds. Those aren't the answers you get. You get things like, what a leader, somebody that you can look up to because of their work ethic. They grind, they go hard, they're in the gym extra hours. All these things that almost every athlete could have. You could go in there and learn how to be a leader. You could go in there and have great work ethic. Or you might make those around you better. Or you might be loyal, or something along those lines. All players are capable of doing. So if you were to stop and think about that special player and write down all the qualities, that one you looked up to when you were in high school, say, you would find out most of those things are within your grasp. There's some things that aren't, but most of those things you can take care of. So are you taking care of what you can take care of to try and become an elite player? Thanks, and back to you guys.
Thank you, PGC. We appreciate everything you do for us here at the Hardwood Hustle and everything you do for the basketball community at large. Everybody check out pgcbasketball.com.
All right, so we are back with Nate, DJ, Markel, three DeMatha studs, not stags, three DeMatha studs. See what I did there, Alan?
I did.
That?
Wow, you're
original.
Brilliant.
Yeah, you're absolutely brilliant. It's probably never been said before. All right, let's talk in. Obviously, we were talking a little bit about your high school journey. I'm going to start with you, Nate. All three of you guys play AAU, correct? Okay, yeah. And all three different teams, actually. So two questions. One, when you're playing each other, even though you're teammates at DeMatha, like, is there any love, you know, are you all kind of being a little nicer on the court? You hear that so much in the NBA that these guys are such good friends that you can't be competitive. You can't want to beat these guys. So when you guys play each other, are you all still trying to, like, crush each other? And then two, do you find yourself – so that's the first question. Have you actually played them, Nate? Oh, you haven't actually played them?
We play in, like, that Under Armour circuit. And they're in the Nike circuit, so we didn't meet last summer.
Okay, do you two play each other, DJ?
Yeah, we did. Nate came, like, near the end of AAU season.
Yeah, came midway through AAU season.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you two have played?
Yeah.
All right. And just because you're teammates, you still want to beat them, though, right?
Yeah, it's like an open gym. Three of us always go at it. If, like, one of us scores on each other, then we feel like we need to go back and do the same to them. Not trying to embarrass anybody or anything, but just like get better, make each other better.
That's fair.
And it's just, it's like you don't want, you're friends, but on the court you're not friends. You can always return to being friends when you're off the court.
You agree, Marco?
Yeah, I sure do.
Okay, let me ask you a question. Do you find yourself playing harder? And I'm going to ask you two first.
Okay.
Markel and DJ, do you find yourself playing harder for DeMatha or for AAU?
I would say it's a tie, pretty much.
It's a tie?
But AAU, I would say I feel more freedom, more like, because it's not as strict as high school. I think I go at more people a little bit more harder in AAU because I feel like I can do that in AAU because I'm really like the top man on my team. Everybody looks up to me. So.
Okay. And you play for the
DC Blue Devils.
DC Blue Devils. What about you, DJ? You play harder for high school or AAU?
Like Markel said, I think it's about a tie. I play for a Team Takeover. Keith Stevens is a great coach. It's more like what Markel said, more freedom almost. It's like in AAU, they just roll the balls out and let you go. and then it's like, especially playing EYBL, I think it's very, very, very. A lot of challenge. That's why I really wanted to go to the EYBL, Nike, because I heard about the competition, and I played up most of my my basketball career for the competition because I didn't want to level off.
Hmm.
And I think high school basketball is really good of, like, let me develop my leadership role for farther in life.
Yeah.
Have you ever? Let me.
Oh no, go ahead, Adam.
I know you all are young. You're only a sophomore, DJ, and you're a junior. Have either of you guys gotten burned out at all yet? I mean, because you all play a lot of basketball. I mean, do you find yourself burned out? How do you stay fresh? How do you stay hungry?
Well, honestly, I did get burned out this past summer because I was going all over the place with USA Basketball, all these camps. And I just, like, took a week off, not doing anything, hanging out with friends.
Good for you.
And it's actually... it's helpful because just too much basketball is, like, sickening almost.
Yeah, I'm sure you're probably just like, I don't even want to go back on the court right now.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And then I just, like, it was just tiring.
Okay.
Mark. Yeah, with me, I really don't take no breaks. It's hard. I think that's my pain relief. When I'm stressed, I go in the gym and get up shots. And so basically I think that it relieves pain and stress from off me. So that's what I think.
Nice.
Now, a couple things. Hang on. I didn't mean to cut you off, Nate. You know that we always want to make everything a life lesson, and I very much appreciate your guys' honesty. But one day, you guys are going to be interviewed by ESPN. Some of you are going to walk across the stage and shake Adam Silver's hand. If anybody ever asks you when you play harder, the answer is always every time you step on the court, you play as hard as you're capable of. And they both said it was a tie, which is why I think is a really cool answer. AAU, and I'm a... I mean, I love Keith Stevens. I mean, Keith Stevens go way back. I'm a big fan of the programs that you guys play for. Kind of the bad rap of AAU in general is that all you do is play games. And DJ, you even mentioned just kind of roll the ball out. So I do appreciate the freedom. But how much time do you guys spend working on your own game in the offseason instead of just playing games? I think that's one of the biggest messages that I want any players listening right now is that these three guys here work on their craft every day, every week throughout the year. They're not, so when Markel's playing for the Blue Devils, he's not just playing eight games on a weekend and then laying around Monday through Friday. He's in the gym working on his craft, working on his game to get better. And I think that kind of what's gets lost. What would a typical week in the offseason for you look like, DJ? You're going to play a weekend tournament in Vegas with Team Takeover. What are you doing during the week to prepare yourself to play, to work on a, you know, on a higher level?
Always shooting. Working on my ball handling and finishing through contact. The gun's been helpful. Watching videos of dribbling drills, like Better Basketball, I've grown up watching those. And then working out is like crucial to if you're trying to be great. Like this past summer, my dad and I were thinking not even to play AAU because I was developing such bad habits and just working out every day, 3-4 times a day.
Yeah, and I tell you what, man.
Interesting.
And you've always been a good shooter since I've known you, but the work you've put in between last year and this year is very noticeable. You are a much better and a much more consistent shooter this year than you were last year.
And we had former DeMatha grad Paul Rabel on recently.
Yes.
And he, if you remember, he actually said his biggest development as an athlete was between his freshman and sophomore year.
Yeah.
He said that was the biggest growth out of any season in his entire life.
Now, I have a question. I'm going to start with Nate, but then we'll pass it on down the line. If we went and asked any coach in our program and any player in our program, what basketball skill is your strongest strength, what would every single person say without blinking?
Shooting.
Yeah, you're an absolute great shooter. And that's. But my question to you is, and I know you put in a lot of time, how much emphasis do you think about or put into working the other aspects of your game? One discussion that Adam and I always have is how much time should you spend making your strength stronger versus working on your weaknesses? And you have other parts of your game that are very good. You have an unbelievably high IQ. You're one of the best passers on our team. We do need to continue to work with you defensively, of course, but that's okay. Yeah. I mean, you have other strengths, but what is your mindset? Is your goal that, you know, I'm going to continue to be one of the best shooters in the country and that's what I'm going to hang my hat on? Or do you spend a lot of time worrying about the other aspects of your game?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm trying to be a complete player. You know, I don't really like being known as just a shooter. So like over the summer, I try to do everything. Like my dad got me a defensive trainer where I go 2 hours like 3 times a week, just straight up defense, don't touch a ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, the other time I just be working on my ball handling. Like I always work on my ball handling before I start shooting. And you know, that's basically it.
Gotcha.
Now, I heard a recent story. This came from a shooter, a college basketball player that was a shooter. Every time, it was actually a female, Rachel, who we had on. Every time she'd get in the gym, she just loved shooting, so she'd always be so tempted. She never worked on her ball handling because she just would always put up shots because the hoop's there and it's just more fun. She would lock herself in a room, maybe the size of this room right here, without a hoop and work on her ball handling in a closed, locked door where there would be no distractions. Kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, DJ, you are a very, and Markel as well, you're a very complete player. What would you say your strongest strengths are, and what would you say are the most applicable weaknesses that you'd try and improve on as you continue to go through your career?
I think one of my strongest parts of my game, probably my mid-range pull-up, also my finishing at the rim. I always want to work on my shooting, my perimeter shooting. I always think I can get better, and I just really want to work on everything, every part of my game. Right now, everybody says I play too fast. I'm always trying to slow down, breathe, play more calm.
Yeah, and learn to change tempo and pace. Yeah. Absolutely. How about you, Markel? You're a very, very well-rounded player, but what would you say you do best, and what would you say is one or two things that you'd like to improve on?
I would say my best attribute is beating you off the dribble, getting to the rim, or even pull up. I can also shoot, but I think I want to work on my defense a little better. I think if I become one of the best defenders, that'll get my offense even going even faster.
Yep.
So, yeah.
That's Markel, what's your dream when it comes to basketball? Like, what are some of the things you sit at home and, like, dream about with this game of basketball? Is it walking across the stage? Is it – what is it?
Just being in the NBA, playing basketball, doing what I love all the time. So, that's my goal.
DJ, same question for you. What do you sit at home and dream about?
I dream about of being a lottery pick, just being one of the great, go down as one of the greats in the NBA, working, like as Markel said, having a job that you love going in every day to do, and then getting paid to play basketball.
Yeah. And paid handsomely.
Yeah, that's not a bad gig. How about you, Nate? Same goal?
Yeah, I just want to be the best shooter ever. Honestly,
and I'm gonna ask you. I mean, just straight up.
Listen, we got the next Kyle Korver in the room right
Without
now.
Question, we could. Do you believe that you could play in the NBA one day?
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's why I'm here. I'm trying to get to the NBA. That's every kid's dream, right?
I love that.
And, you know, you work on it every day, thinking about playing in the NBA, taking shots like you're in the NBA.
And I mean this very respectfully.
Love this guy,
no,
man.
I know.
This guy, I love.
Now
this,
I mean this very respectfully.
Spirit, man.
Probably different than Markel and DJ. You will have a lot more people telling you that will never happen. That can't happen. That physically, that you are not capable of playing at that level for reasons that we can all chuckle about right now.
Yeah, like I'm a 6'3 white guy, you know?
Absolutely.
That's what it is.
Yeah. But is that something that fuels you? Is that something you just ignore? Or is that something that motivates you? Like, are you the type that you kind of want to prove people wrong? Or do you just disregard it completely?
You know, I've been told, like a couple times, like, when I was younger, like, I tried to play on, like, the best team in, like, in the city. And then, like, some people were telling me just, like, you know, play at home, like, whatever. Like, you're not going to the NBA anyway. And, you know, like, that stuff just, like, it fuels you. Like, you want to be like, yeah, I'm going to the NBA, right? Like, it's just.
Yeah.
DJ, what was your first impression of Nate? Let's be honest here. Did you look at Nate and say, oh, man, this guy can't play? Like, what's he doing out here in DeMatha? Like when you first saw him.
And it's okay if you thought that. Remember, I thought that the first time I met him at that clinic. I was like, dude, you're not coming to DeMatha next.
I knew from the complexion of his skin that he was a shooter.
It's usually true, but Adam can't shoot a lick. So don't always believe that. Oh, that's pretty funny. No, go ahead, DJ.
And then when he started playing, I thought, geez, this dude can play. Like, he can do more than shoot. He's a great ball handler. He's a great passer. And like Coach Stein said, his IQ is way up there.
So is Kyle Korver kind of like your guy that you model your game after, or is it more like a Mike Miller?
No, you know,
Jimmer.
Jimmer.
And don't make Adam pigeonhole you to liking a white guy. If you like Stephen Curry, you like Kyrie Irving, you want to say, man.
I love Steph Curry, man. I love, like, shooting off the dribble, coming down, transition threes and stuff. Like, that's what I work on in the gym. Like, you know, I don't want to be like just a spot up shooter. I want to be able to, like, do like all types of shooting. Like,
who's your favorite player in the NBA, Markel?
Kevin Durant.
Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
And that's somebody you'd kind of like to emulate as well. How about you, DJ?
My favorite player right now is Carmelo.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. And let me say this, and again, I know I'm always bragging on these three, but Nate, make sure Nate's got the mic. I know we talked about it maybe 2 weeks ago. How much body weight have you put on since the day you took your recruiting trip here till now? And don't give us kilograms. We're in America, dude. Yeah. Pounds, baby. Pounds. How many pounds have you put on?
I think I came to DeMatha as 6 foot, 135, 140. I'm now 6'3", 6'4", 180. So.
Wow. Yeah, so he's put on 40 pounds. But here's the reason that I want to make sure that everybody understands. In just over a year, Nate's been able to put on close to 40 pounds and make major strides in his game. He has one more year of high school and then potentially 4 years playing at college. He has 5 more years to potentially grow and develop before he even needs to worry about playing professionally. And with his work habits and the way that he's so dedicated, what he could accomplish in the next 5 years, anyone that wants to bet against him, please do that. I will take that bet in. I'll put a stack on him right now that he'll accomplish whatever he wants to accomplish. And same thing with DJ and with Markel. The growth, I mean, again, we've already talked about, you know, DJ came here fairly highly touted already. He came to DeMatha with a lot of shine, where Markel and Nate didn't. But DJ's made unbelievable progress as well. But like we said, how good Markel's gotten in the last 2 years, if he continues that rate of growth for the next 2 years and the 2 years after that, He will shake Adam Silver's hand. I can promise you
that's
that.
Awesome.
And that's just a testament to these three guys.
All right, DJ, I want to ask you, you know, every athlete, they all talk about the zone. You know, you get in the zone, it's like throwing a rock in an ocean. Everything goes in, you're just locked in. There's a lot of high school athletes that are listening to this right now, a lot of coaches that are listening to this all over the country. Talk about the zone for you. I'd like to know what you do to get in the zone. Like, think about those times where you just are playing your best ball. Like, what do you do to mentally get to where you need to be?
Usually in the summer, that's when I felt like as if nobody could stop me. Like, I would start, getting to the rim, working my way out. And then, like, it was just, like, when I knocked down, like, a few threes, I just kept letting them go. And then it's like you said, throwing a rock in the ocean. And then one of my biggest scoring game, like my highest scoring games, was actually playing DeMatha Summer League ball this past summer, and that's when I went out and had 35, and that's like I went like 8 for 8 from three. So,
is it anything like is it trash talking? Is it maybe the opponent questioning you or like getting you worked up that allows you to get to the next level?
Just people saying that I can't do things. Coming as a freshman, people would say I can't shoot at all. And, like, they wouldn't even close out on me because they knew all I wanted to do was drive. So I wanted them to respect my jumper. So like that really made me want to like get my shot where it needed to be, to where people had to respect my game. And then that would open up what I really wanted to do, was drive. And so like that, with them on me, would make it easier for me to get in the lane.
And one thing I want to make sure you guys understand, because I've been fortunate enough to spend time with KD, with CP, with Steph Curry, with some of the guys that, we all look up to. And those are guys that tend to be in the zone more times than not. And one thing I want to make sure that you guys understand is that getting in the zone, it's not an accident. It's because of your habits, and it's because of the things you do all of the time. And anytime you feel like you're in the zone, like that summer league game or an AAU game, what you need to do immediately is backtrack the last 48 hours and replay everything in your day that you did that put you in that position, and then start doing more of that stuff. And if you ever have a bad game, everybody has a bad game, you do the same thing and you backtrack and you look back and say, what did I do different? And you know, maybe, well, I stayed up to 2 a.m. studying for a history test last night. Well, then you realize how much sleep affects your performance, and you know that in order for you to be in the zone, you can't let that be something that detracts. And I think, you know, really for you guys, you, the ceiling is unbelievably high. You guys have tremendous potential. You have wonderful attitudes, tremendous work ethics. If you continue to not believe the hype and put in work, you're going to be three very, very special, not only high school basketball players, college basketball players, and then I'll bet money that all three of these guys get paid to play this game one day. Just make sure you continue on the path that you're on.
Nate, tell me about the strength and conditioning coach at DeMath. I mean, is he decent?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I mean, the guy's got his own podcast. He's got to be fairly decent. But no, before we say goodbye to these three, we want to make sure we take a full time out with the folks at Better Basketball.
Hello, I'm Rick Torbett, and welcome to another full timeout brought to you by BetterBasketball.com. Let's say your team is not playing as intensely as you would like them to play. Now, there are ways to raise intensity, and how much you do to raise intensity in practice, those are things to consider, but I'm not going to address those. Instead, I want you to first consider trying to raise your intensity on defense and not on offense. Here's why. According to mental skills and toughness trainer Dr. Spencer Wood, offense requires a lower emotional content to execute fine motor skills. You don't want to pump up or hype up your players above their normal levels on offense, or you'll see your shooting percentages go down and your turnovers go up, you know, passing, catching, executing skills. But defense can handle a higher emotional content because defense recruits major muscle groups, the big explosive ones, not the fine motor skill muscles. So, if you want to raise your team's level of intensity, start by doing it on defense. Consider trapping in spurts or trapping in spots. Create a color code that tells everyone to deny everything and switch all screens, but only do it for one possession at a time. Just like a change of speed, they'll soon become aware that they can change their intensity. And if they can do it for one possession, then work on two possessions in a row. If they can do it for two, then eventually three and four possessions in a row. Soon you'll be measuring it in minutes, not possessions. And before you know it, you've created a culture of intensity.
Thank you, Better Basketball. We appreciate your support of the Hardwood Hustle. We appreciate everything you do for basketball players, parents, and coaches all over the world. Everyone, make sure you check out betterbasketball.com. And today's Vertimax Hustler Award goes to Top Flight 101. Thank you so much for going into iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. The title was simply wow, and I don't know if you're making fun of me because I always say that, but we appreciate the title. And Top Flight 101, you were kind enough to say, the Hardwood Hustle is the best in the business, hands down. As a player, I learn something new every time I hear one of their great podcasts. They hold themselves to a very high standard and to continue to dominate all facets of the game. Great job. Keep on hustling. Top Flight 101, we appreciate your kind words. Simply email me at alan@strongerteam.com. We have now entered your name into the grand prize drawing for a Vertimax EX system, which retails for almost $4,000, and we may pull your name out of a hat at the 2015 NCAA Men's Final Four. We truly appreciate it, folks. If you want to have a chance to win a Vertimax, all you got to do is go into iTunes, leave us a 5-star rating and review. Everybody else, make sure you check out Vertimax.com.
And coaches, did you know the average number of turnovers committed by a high school basketball team in the 2013-2014 season was 15 turnovers a game? So use that as a benchmark, coaches. Under 15, your chances increase significantly.
Absolutely,
to win,
and that's one of the benchmarks we use here at DeMatha. I want to make sure we thank Nate, we thank DJ Markel, and for Adam, this is Alan. We appreciate y'all listening. Keep on hustling.
Peace.
Thanks for having us.
Hey, Adam, what are folks saying about the hardwood hustle?
Provocative.
No, it's not.
It gets the people going.
Hey, Alan, why do you think people should listen to the hardwood hustle?
I don't know how to put this, but I'm kind of a big deal. People know me.
There you have it, folks. Two legit reasons to listen to every episode. If you love the hardwood hustle, please tell a friend or a colleague or simply tweet it to the world. And if you don't love the hardwood hustle, please visit a psychiatrist or call me directly at 202-524-0875. Either way, we appreciate you listening.